Now, how do we basically develop the market for crop protection products? So there are multiple activities that are undertaken in this particular type of promotional activity or market development activity that needs to be done. First of all, there are farm-to-farm visits. So obviously, there are people from various governmental bodies, manufacturing units who visit farms and provide demonstrations of the product. They start talking about the good things. There are farmer meets organized at village levels by various companies and governmental bodies. Spot demonstrations are done. So if most of the time there are these village markets or mandis and haats where these manufacturing units or government bodies, they tie up with each other, collaborate and set up a stall which gives them a spot demonstration of how a particular pesticide works. Farmer training is also a market development activity. Now, though we have been telling that training the farmers is a very important aspect, or rather has a very important impact in the pesticide market, training also is an opportunity for manufacturers to create an impact of their brand in the minds of the farmers. So a very well executed training will ensure that the farmer not only understands the concept that is being taught, but at the same time, the retention of the brand name, which give them an amazing training, is very high. Dealer distribution trainings are also another way wherein we have generally seen this in other sectors like FMCG, where regular FMCG and pharma for that matter, where regular dealer training keeps happening so that dealers are aware of what are the various type of products that are coming out from the manufacturer. They're given an idea or they're given a platform where they can also discuss their ideas about improving the market. Now, when this is done, the dealer becomes more loyal towards a particular product or a particular brand, and that particular brand can be pushed further into the market. Obviously, the another type of market development activity is group discussion. So, who basically does this group discussion? This is not the farmers in the village. Certain influencers are identified at every location. They can be your district agricultural authorities, they can be a progressive farmer from a particular location who is very well known. All these people can come together on a platform with an audience and discuss about the various methods of pest management. The rural consumer also participates in local fairs, melas, haats. Now, these are also a very good opportunity for companies to provide mass advertisements. So we did speak about spot demonstrations, so that is one aspect of the market development activity. But these social gatherings that happen, or these markets at various levels that happen in India, are also amazing marketing opportunities for several brands. In fact, several FMCG brands have been using these social gatherings and markets to put their brand forward and increase rural consumerism towards their brands. It is high time that the agro input industries, whether they are pesticides, whether they are seed companies, or whether they are fertilizer companies, should utilize this segment or should utilize this area where there are so much captive audience available readily for promoting their products in a much better manner. Packing of pesticides, another important aspect. We need to understand that these are chemicals and their packaging requires specific care. Now, packing does not necessarily mean that they have to be in leak-proof containers and, you know, they have to be stored in an area where there is not much light, the container cannot be transparent, it has to be translucent so that it does not directly interact with sunlight. That is all fine, that is definitely there. The most important part about pesticide packaging is the labeling. There are various categories of pesticides that we come across. So there is a category 1 to category 4. The category needs to be mentioned on the pesticide. There are certain symbols, color-coded symbols that tell us about the toxicity level of the pesticides. That needs to be incorporated. So unless and until we look at the packaging completely. Now, why do you think the packaging and labeling has to be so important? Because anyone who takes that product needs to be aware about the product, needs to be aware of what level and what category this thing is, and what is the toxicity level so that they can take necessary measures to ensure they do not harm themselves while using the product. These are a few examples here. This is certain pesticides created by Bayer. Now, if we look at this, this is basically a label for a pesticide called Topper 80. if you look at it, there are everything written. This is a symbol that we need to take care of. In the future, in the next couple of slides, you will be seeing that this particular symbol means this is, yes, it is poisonous, but not extremely toxic. It's not something that will kill, but it will definitely harm us. There is weight mentioned here, and here there are directions of use mentioned. So if you look at the entire label, there are various things here. Mode of action, how do you put it in place, how do you use it in on field. So for example, if I am looking at weed control for weeds, I can use spraying. This is basically the herbicide which is used for weed control, and the basic method that can be used for applying this is spraying it. And the dosage is also mentioned here. One of the most important aspect of this label is the first aid portion here. The first aid portion says that if there is any form of ingestion or any form of harmful side effects that the person who is using it has been seeing, what is the step that they need to take? If the person's eyes or skin is exposed to this particular chemical, what are the actions that they need to take? This is an important part of labeling of pesticides. Without this, they cannot release the chemicals out. If you look at your home, if you take out, say, a can of HIT or Mortine, you will find something similar on the labeling of that can. You will also find a similar symbol on those bottles. So whether they are domestically used pesticides, agriculturally used pesticides, or commercial industrial pesticides, this specific type of label is what is required on those products. This is another example of a herbicide where here it is specifically mentioned that this is a group 1 herbicide. This is just one part of the label. The second part will obviously have the symbols. Now, these are the categorizations of pesticides. So every color has a different annotation or a different meaning to it. The worst of the most dangerous ones are categorized with this red, bright red diamond shaped symbol. So what it basically means is that it is extremely toxic and it is a poison and it has to be kept out of reach. If swallowed or symptoms, you need to immediately rush to a doctor. So this is something that is life threatening. Then we come to the lower level of poison. This is extremely toxic, which can result in death. This, if attempted by a medical practitioner immediately on ingestion, can or possibly save the person who has ingested it. So it is highly toxic, obviously. It is also a poison. We need to keep it out of the reach of children or any other weak member of the family, in whether they are diseased, whether they are old, or in any such case. This is what we saw in one of the labels. This basically means it is dangerous, it is moderately toxic, it has to be definitely kept out of reach. And the last one that we see here is slightly toxic. So ingestion will create discomfort in the body, but again, it has to be kept away from the people who can get affected by such chemicals. Any pesticide that comes out into the market, whether they are powder, spray form, or any other form, they have to have these symbols on them depending on the toxicity levels. Now, application equipments. Like I said, pesticides cannot be just used physically on the field. You need certain equipments which can help in application of these pesticides on the field. Now, the total, how do you decide on which application equipment has to be selected? It depends on the area where the application needs to be done. It depends on the labor availability for that particular farmer. If there is a huge area but the person does not have enough labor, there is no point investing in a simple equipment. The person may require a huge equipment. For example, the rubber estates in Kerala are huge and they require a lot of manpower to actually implement pesticides. Another problem with rubber is that the pests actually affect the top portion of the trees, and these trees actually grow quite a few feet tall. So the equipment generally used by rubber estate owners are helicopters that can spray pesticides on the top of the trees. So that is the equipment that they use in that particular area. We need to also look at availability of dilutants, whether you have availability of water, oil, or kerosene, which is used for diluting the pesticide and then implementing on the field. What is the dosage that is required? What is the speed of application? Do you need to do it immediately? There are certain pesticides which are volatile. You mix it with a dilutant and you have to spray it immediately. You cannot keep it for a long time. Or there will be some chemical reaction between the dilutant and the pesticide, and they may cause sedimentation. They may cause adverse reactions and things like that. And also, the farmer needs to look at the cost aspect. How much is it going to cost the farmer to apply this? Now, there are a few types of equipments that one can look at. This is a sprayer that can be used by hand. This is more or less known as an atomizer. So the nozzle here is so small that it kind of creates a mist of the pesticide that is sprayed. This is a normal one that most of us may have observed if we do pest control at our home. The person who comes in to do the pest control carries this kind of compressed sprayer. So he basically uses this pump to compress the sprayer in the tank, and then he sprinkles it all over the place. So this is the most common hand compressed sprayer, or the most common equipment that you can find on the fields and even in our day-to-day lives when we do pest control. This is basically another method. There is something called a tracted mounted sprayer. So the idea is that the pesticide is stored in this tank, and through a mechanism, while the tractor moves through the field, the pesticide is sprayed on the field. This is specifically used for large areas where you need to do a lot of pesticide application, and you need to do it fast. You cannot rely on manual labor, or you do not have manual labor to do this. This is something that we may have seen in the recent times. This is something that the BMC has now asked, or the Bombay Municipal Corporation has now asked, for every building, every locality to have this kind of sprayer where they can spray certain sanitization chemicals. This is a knapsack sprayer that can be worn like a backpack on the person who wants to spray it. And obviously there is a compression here using which the person sprays the chemical onto various surfaces or the crops in the soil. Now, the efficacy of the pesticide in any application is influenced by various factors. One of them is the dosage, the total amount of active ingredient that are used for the specific targeted area. Now, we may use 50 grams of a specific pesticide, but that does not necessarily mean that 50 grams contain exact 50 grams of pesticide also. Now, this 50 grams may actually only have 10 grams of the active ingredient. That also impacts on how much is the efficacy of the pesticides. So, for example, if the active component is in a ratio of 1:5 in comparison to the total pesticide volume, the efficacy is not that great, because then you need to use a lot of material to cover a specific piece of land. The distribution of deposit is another factor that influences the efficacy of the pesticide. Here, the distribution, if it is not distributed in a better manner, if it is not distributed in a uniform manner across the field, certain areas may get certain side effects more than the others. Certain areas may have better results than the others. So a lot of things can happen like this. Droplet size is another very, very important factor when it comes to efficacy of a pesticide. There are certain wetting agents inside the pesticide compound, and if the droplet size is decreased, if we use an atomizer which creates a mist, it can actually cover a larger area. At the same time, a sprinkler can only cover a specific small portion. So what is the droplet size? How much is the wetting agent actually impacting the droplet size will also impact the efficacy of the pesticide. The larger the area we cover, the larger the efficacy of the pesticide is, because you will be using a very small quantity to create an impact in a very large area. Let us now look at a few plant protection policies that the government of India follows. Now, there are certain major thrust areas, certain priority areas that the plant protection policy looks at, from which is implemented by the government of India. First of all is the promotion of IPM, which is the integrated pest management. We looked at the IPM in the previous session and we tried to understand why IPM is so important. Obviously, it goes without saying that the government also ensures that IPM is promoted as much as possible in the agricultural sector of the country. It also emphasizes on ensuring the availability of safe and good quality pesticides for sustainable crop production. Like we know, chemical pesticides or any other form of pesticides which are inorganic or organic result in some form of damage to the crop or the human life which is handling it. So this particular policy focuses on how much safe can we make the pesticides and how easily can we get these safe and good quality pesticides available to the people who are going to use it. Streamlining and quarantine measures also fall under this. So any new kind of variety that is either imported or created has to be quarantined for a specific time so as to ensure that, you know, unnecessary pests do not enter by way of these varieties. Elimination of exotic pest entries into the country is also controlled by this particular policy, and human resource development, including empowerment of women in plant protection skills, falls under the purview of this policy. Now, the plan basically looks into it is being implemented by there is a specific scheme that is being implemented by the Plant Protection Division, which is coming under the direct Department of Agriculture and Cooperation. Basically, what they look at is promotion, like we said in the earlier section, that it looks at promotion of IPM. It looks at locust control and research. In India, in several parts, locust is a very big menace for the farmers. And locust control is what a key area of research is being undertaken in the Indian agricultural sector. There are various means in which they are trying to control locusts, either by ensuring that or inhibiting the procreation in locusts, making them sterile, ensuring that their lifespan reduces, or even at times they are trying to look at methodologies which can actually ensure that the locust egg never hatches. So there are many different forms of researches that are going on specifically in the area of locust control. Another area that another scheme that is going on or under this particular policy is that of training in plant protection. The policy ensures that adequate training is given to farmers, wives of farmers, and other specific people or influencers or key persons in the village who ensure that plant protection activities are taken to top priority. One of the major schemes or one of the major key responsibility area of the plant protection policy is to ensure that the Insecticides Act is well implemented at the grassroots level. Now, from the perspective of promoting integrated pest management in the country, there are various methods that are used. We have seen a few methods of IPM, whether they are cultural methods, mechanical, biological, or usage of biopesticides. IPM is being promoted in the country as an eco-friendly approach towards pesticide, pest control. And it is aiming at minimal usage of chemical pesticides by adopting a lot of alternative methods that can control pests to a great extent. Locust control research, like I said before, are being conducted in several areas. The locusts are a collection of certain species of short-horned grasshoppers. They kind of come in swarms, destroy the crop, and leave. These insects are usually solitary, but under certain circumstances, they come in abundant numbers and infect the crops or rather destroy the crops. In this situation, the crop loss is almost 80 to 100%. And hence, it is very important for the government of India to ensure a lot of locust control research happens so that the crop loss through this particular pest is reduced to the maximum. Locust warning organization is set up in Jaipur, in Jodhpur, where there are 10 locust circle offices under this particular organization. There are field stations that monitor more than 2 lakh square kilometers of a specific scheduled desert area in Rajasthan, Gujarat, and Haryana. Generally, it is said that locusts swarm in from the deserts, and that is why these three states are the kind of the most worst affected with locusts. Now, close liaisons are being maintained with other locust prone countries where we can learn from them and try to see what are the best practices that they are doing to ensure locust control. Now, obviously, it is not 100% success right now. It is still a research on how can we control locusts in the country. There are various countries which are looking at various methodologies, but there is a very specific focus given on this particular type of pest because, like I said before, the crop loss is very, very high. Training in plant protection is the third key area where the plant protection policy functions. Here, there are regional training centers set up, and even UN is involved, the United Nations is involved in this particular scheme. The advanced training center for the plant protection is set up by help of the World Bank. So training in plant protection is not just a localized activity as far as our country is concerned. We have tie-ups with major world organizations like United Nations and World Bank. The implementation of Insecticides Act under the Plant Protection Policy happens through a board which is set up. The central government has basically constituted a central insecticides board, like we saw it under the Insecticides Act slide. The Section 4 of Insecticides Act is basically advising the state and central governments on various technical matters and various administrative matters that can be taken into consideration while ensuring implementation of the Insecticides Act, not only at the government level or the organization level, but also at the very grassroots last mile level in the country. The central government has also set up a central insecticides lab, which basically looks at the pre and post registration verification of the properties, performances, and various hazards that pesticides can pose. Manufacturers usually put across their new products into these labs before they register themselves and after they register themselves, acquire the license, and then go ahead with commercializing their product. There are two regional pesticides testing labs that have been set up in Chandigarh alone. Now, how do we monitor pesticide residues? This also comes under the plant protection policy of the government. This subject is basically, or this particular job is given to the Department of Agriculture and Cooperation by the Cabinet Secretariat. Monitoring pesticide residues at national levels is very, very important so that we ensure food safety in the country. If the residues are high in the soil quality deteriorates. If the soil quality deteriorates, there are no nutrients. How much ever we pump in the fertilizers into the soil, the plants will not be able to take it in. Yield will definitely get affected, or we will get substandard or even at times poisonous crops. To avoid this, there is requirement of regular monitoring of pesticide residues in the soil. It is also essential to ensure that our export consignments that go to the various countries around the world are not rejected due to the presence of pesticide residues. We export quite a few fruits, vegetables, and grains to other countries of the world, and if pesticide residues are found on them, it will impact our exports to a very great extent. On the recommendation of Planning Commission, there is a single scheme that is run under this particular policy. It's called the Strengthening and Modernization of Pest Management Approach in India. Some of the features of this scheme are basically pesticide-related reading material and reference books that are provided to the farmers or various stakeholders in the industry. Brand establishments of pesticides. How do we establish the brands? How do you register them, trademark them, and put them across various tests so that we ensure the best quality pesticides are coming out. Plant quarantine laws or government policies for import-export procedures also fall under this particular scheme. Now, let us look at the activity of plant quarantine. We've been talking about plant quarantine since the last session. So let us look at this in a little detail. Now, inspection of all the produce which are entering through a particular harbor or port is mandatory, because if we do not check any kind of plant or crop that is coming in through the other country or coming through overseas inside our country, there is every possibility that we will give entry to a particular pest, a foreign pest, which we have not dealt with yet. In such situations, the cost of research, the cost of tackling these pests will be very, very high. Strict isolation of a specific species is very, very important. If there are times when certain species are imported into the country for study, even in these times, it is imperative that we follow strict isolation procedures. Unfortunately, the quarantine procedures normally just postpones the entry of pests, because in the quarantine, the pests may not necessarily show any impact, but the moment we put it out in the field, there is a pest resurgence. Now, in these conditions, the quarantine activity kind of fails and falls flat. Strict and successful quarantine activity is actually followed by Australia, and the best practices are actually looked upon and referred by other countries, including India. The plant quarantine regulatory measures in India are operated through the Destructive Insects and Pests Act of 1914. The purpose and intent of the act is to prevent the introduction of any insect, fungus, or any other pest which can be harmful to the crops. The import of agricultural commodities is presently regulated through the Plant Quarantine Order of 2003. So we have two different legislations which are now controlling what are the various plants or crops that we can get from other countries, and how do we ensure that proper quarantine is maintained and we ensure better control of the pests that may or may not come from the specific exported exotic plant. In India, the significance of plant quarantine has increased since globalization and liberalization has opened up the markets for foreign players to enter into the agricultural scenario. There is also a lot of focus on the sanitary and phytosanitary agreement that we have entered with the WTO. The phytosanitary certification of agricultural commodities being exported is also undertaken through the scheme as per the International Plant Protection Convention, that is IPPC, that was held in 1951. So under this, there are certain phytosanitary certifications that every agricultural commodity that is going out of this country has to avail before it reaches the foreign land. Now, the primary objective of the plant quarantine scheme in India is to prevent the introduction and spread of exotic pests that can be harmful for our products by regulating and restricting, first of all, the import of plants and plant products into the country. The scheme also ensures to facilitate safe global trade in agriculture by assisting the producers as well as the exporters by providing a technically competent and reliable phytosanitary certificate system. This basically helps in meeting the requirements of various trading partners and ensures that the entire agricultural export section of our import-export scheme is smoothly functioning. So, what are the major activities under this particular scheme? So, first of all, there is inspection of imported agricultural commodities. There is inspection of agricultural commodities that are going out. So, both inflow and outflow of agricultural commodities are inspected and checked. Detection of exotic pests and diseases already introduced for containing or controlling them. Undertaking post-entry quarantine inspection and post-entry quarantine procedures for specific plant or plant materials. Conducting pest risk analysis, which is PRA, to finalize the phytosanitary requirements and thereby give the certificate to the necessary authorities or the necessary company. Thank you so much.